Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, rude boys and rude girls, do we have a fun one for you today? My old pal Mike Park and I break down the Skank and Pickle classic, I Miss the Bus, taken from their 1992 album, Skank and Pickle Fever. Mike and I go back almost 30 years, and it was a pleasure catching up with him. This is a super early song in the Pickle catalog, and there's moments throughout the song that, for lack of a better term, Mike feels a bit embarrassed about. From an artist's perspective, I get it. But from a fan perspective, this song will always be a hit to me. And I don't have one iota of embarrassment attached to the song, as I love it just as much as I did when I first heard it. Mike talks of how Skank and Pickle was a full democracy among its members, and you can truly hear that each person had their say in this particular track. As a fan, I was surprised to learn a lot about not only this song, but the band that I adore. If you ever had the honor of seeing them live, you know. One of the most fun times I've ever had at a show. Total powerhouse. For all this and a whole lot more, bust out those checkerboard pants and I'll see you on the dance floor.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
Mike Park. What's shaking?
Not much. Just excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you. The first thing I want to say to you is congratulations on 25 years of Asian Man Records, which I don't know where the time went. I don't think you do either.
Absolutely not. It's crazy.
I remember when you said I'm starting another label because, of course, Les and Jake did a record with Dill Records, which was Skank and Pickle's kind of band label. And then you set out to do Asian Man, and I was like, okay, cool. And it just blew up, man. And I say okay, cool, kind of like I did, because everybody was starting labels in the 90s, and not a lot of them lasted, you know? So here you are 25 years later. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's exciting, and it still feels fresh, crazily enough. I still feel like I'm learning, and it's just like, I'm a kid still in this aging body.
Yeah, I only feel my age when I walk past a mirror. I'm still 18 in my brain, right?
Heck yeah.
I know you know the format of the podcast, and we're going to dive in today to a Skank and Pickle classic, I Miss the Bus, and we're going to break this one down. But I typically don't like to conduct the podcast as like an interview. But with you, I know that a lot of my listeners are ska and punk listeners, and I just kind of want to set this one up a little bit before we get into the song. You know, I want to talk about where you were at when you got into ska, because I've talked to you about it before, but I even have some questions that I've never asked you. And of course, Mike is from the Bay Area, which has always been kind of a racial melting pot there. And I know that you know, two-tone and ska was very alluring to you. It's very exciting to you. How do you remember the first time you heard ska and what attracted you to that?
Yeah, 100%. I remember I obviously, when MTV first came on, Madness had a hit with Our House, which wasn't a ska song.
Brothers got the night to keep you coming around.
And the English Beat also had airplay on MTV with I Confess, which also was not a ska song. I was listening to those bands and their catalog probably like 1983, but I had no awareness of what ska was. It was just kind of like alternative music to me. So then in my junior year in high school, there was a movie playing at the Art House Theater in San Jose called Dance Craze. And a bunch of friends, including Lars from Skank and Pickle, said there's this documentary about Two-Tone. And I wasn't really understanding what Two-Tone was, but I wanted to go because the friends were going.
The music that changed the world. Together for the first time on the big, big screen, Bad Manners, The Beat, The Body Snatchers, Madness, The Selector, and The Specials. Here it is, Dance Craze.
And it was the first and only time where I went to a movie where people were dancing in the aisles. And I was dancing too, just being young and hopping around. And so the next day I went out and bought Bad Manners Class with a K. And I was off and running. That's when ska hit me, and it hit me hard. I was looking, I was digging through the record store bins looking for all the old Two-Tone. And it was like crazy, crazy addiction. I wanted it all.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I know we've talked about this years ago, but you know, being a Korean American, you felt inclusion. You felt included in this group of ska. You know, when you'd go to shows, maybe more so than other genres. Is that correct to say?
Well, I don't know if I was really aware of that until I saw Fishbone. So I saw Fishbone in '86 also, and the simple reality of seeing six African American males on stage is rare. That back then and today,
yeah,
any rock based music is usually white, and that's just the unfortunate truth of it. So they also had a simple slogan of just the Fishbone logo and fuck racism, and that hit me hard too, where I was like, whoa, this is a statement they're making through music. And those little encounters, that's kind of what like brokered me into the political aspects of ska or just music in general. But yeah, it was very cool to see. And it was a melting pot. You did see a lot of people of color, and it was very diverse, and it was exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had Angelo from Fishbone on the show, and we talked about that too, you know, that time period. And especially, like you said, and how do you even begin to describe Fishbone? I mean, they were all over the place. They were funk, they were soul, they were rock, they were ska. They were just an amazing band. But they're the first band I ever heard a ska song from. It was Party at Ground Zero. That was the first song I had ever heard, which was maybe 87. I was probably 14 years old. And then from there, it just kind of blossoms. Like, hey, have you heard The Specials? And then it was, hey, have you heard Op Ivy? Whoa, this is different. This is like punk, but there's upstroke guitars. And so I had about 3 years of that or so. And I took off for Gainesville in the summer of 1991. And forgive me for gushing a little bit. I think you can respect this, Mike. You don't ever forget your heroes. And Pickle, you were like gods to Less Than Jake. I mean, I was in Gainesville living with Vinny. This would have been late 91, 92. And Vinny, former drummer from Less Than Jake. And he comes home one day from the record store. He's like, check this out. Like, I read a review or something in a magazine, and it was the I Missed the Bus 7-inch. And Pass You By is on there. And the other two songs, which are crazy. I was like, whoa. It was Ice Cube, Korea Wants a Word with You.
Right.
And David Duke is Running for President. That was the four songs. So here you had this song, I Missed the Bus, which is just so such a fun, just wacky, crazy ska song, but you also had this political dynamic within the band where you could be serious. You were, you know, basically calling out David Duke for being a piece of crap and, you know, some of the racially insensitive things that Ice Cube was saying at the time. And there was this whole, like, dichotomy going on at once. And we just loved it, man. You know, and you can think back to those bands that you listened to that you first loved. I mean, we burned a hole in that 7-inch. That's how many times you listened to it. And of course, all four of those songs ended up on Skank and Pickle Fever, your second record. But man, I can't say enough about that time period for me. I mean, you were kind of like my Bad Manners, you know, and. Without going too much further, I'll try to stop with the compliments, but I can't give you enough props. When I saw you first, and I was telling Chris, my producer, about this the other day, you know, my whole shtick was based on a lot of what you did. I saw you at the Covered Dish in Gainesville, and I had questioned you about this a year or so after the fact, and you looked at me like, what? But you had said, I can't remember what song it was, you're like, ladies and gentlemen, this next song was written with a very good friend of ours named Stanley Burrell. You may know him better as MC Hammer. And I bought it. I bought this hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, this is what they wrote with MC Hammer? That's just what, you know? And it was just, you were off the cuff every night. It was stream of consciousness, insanity. And the other five people in that band were insane too, each in their own right. You know, again, those memories I have attached to that time period and what your band, how it shaped me as a performer, I can't stress and thank you enough.
Oh, man, that's cool to hear. I appreciate that. It's very nice. Nice words.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, because, you know, you sometimes look back on your first band and it's like, oh, we were just kids. And it's hard to hear maybe those compliments of being influential to somebody. But, I truly mean it. And, you know, getting into this track, it seems like you guys were pretty prolific and you had played for a couple years up to this point of recording this song. So do you remember when you wrote I Missed the Bus?
This was the very first Skank and Pickle song ever.
Really?
This was the first one. It was 1988. It was me. It was just a three piece. It was me on guitar, our mullet rock and roll drummer, Chuck Phelps, who had never played ska, and this, the original crazy bass player, Mr. Clean. And we just, that
yes,
was the
Mike Mattingly.
And that was the first song. We got together in Mike's parents' house, and it's crazy because I'm so bad at guitar now. I can't even imagine how bad I was back then.
There's just something, you know, and I know you know this because you got submitted to your label every ska band from here to Mars. But a lot of the stuff that I didn't like about ska later on was it got too candy coated for me and just too cheesy and silly. There's something about this, even when I still listen to it today, you know, and I can hear, and I've talked to you about this before, you know, Mr. Clean, as you call them, your bass player, Mike, you know, he sings this song with you. And on this track, I can hear the Boingo and I think some Devo influences mixed in too. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I would include XTC and the Talking Heads too, especially yeah, with Mike. He had this really strange voice.
Yeah. Well, I think that's too what made you guys so unique. And I never really knew Chuck Phelps, the drummer's background, it you know, because he pulled off the ska thing pretty well, but he was unorthodox. No one else sounded like him.
Yeah, he was. He did a lot of studying. Like when we started like playing with other ska bands, he would stand right by the drummer and just watch them. And he tried hard. He was never able to play like the trad one drop beat. He could play it, but mm-hmm, he just couldn't do the fills. It was really weird. But he could do right. He could do rock.
Well, I had never seen you with Mike. He had left the band, I think, maybe the tour before you came to Florida when I first saw Pickle. And I know that he was nuts. You told me he used to do backflips off the top of his bass rig. And I haven't been able to find a video online, but I did end up seeing you with, I believe,
Ian. Was it Ian Miller?
Ian.
Yeah.
Ian. Yeah, that was the first. And Ian was great too. And But did Ian go on to Captured by Robots?
No, that was Jay. So Jay.
That was Jay. That was Jay. Okay, that's who I saw. I saw you with Ian first and then with Jay.
And Jay is the original bass player for the Blue Meanies. He played on the album Kiss Your Ass Goodbye by the Blue Meanies. Okay. And now he's a mad scientist too. He realized he's unable to be in a band because of his personality, and he admits it. So he created an entire band of robots to play with him.
If you haven't checked it out, it's pretty cool, man. I saw them some years ago, and that's right. It was Ian, then it was Jay, and then the rest of the band was rounded out by this 6'2" Korean American named Mike Park, who I'm talking to, who has calves the size of Hulk Hogan's biceps. Just this big dude that had a sack strapped around him, running around going crazy next to Lars Nylander, who was about 6'4", playing the valve trombone, next to Jerry Lundquist, who was 6'7", playing the regular trombone. And then you had Lynette Nackstedt. She's about 6 foot tall,
yeah,
going crazy, sticking her tongue out, making these weird contorted faces the whole time. Unfortunately, we lost Lynette in 2007. Rest her soul. I miss her and think about her all the time. Such a great guitar player. But you guys were just wacky. I remember walking into the Dish that night and looking at you and just seeing this band and the interplay. And again, just so influential. So I Miss the Bus was the first song you wrote. And at that point, did it have horns yet?
It did. I had written the simple horn line on tenor sax. Quickly after that, I recruited Lynette, and we actually played as a four piece probably for a good 6 months before we Lars came into the mix. And so, yeah, that horn line was written. Nothing to write home about with that horn line.
You know, I love it. I think it's great. I know where you're at, though, because I imagine this song's tough for you to listen to, much like my first record, my first demos that we did. It's kind of like a sketch that you did that's not the first, like not the real thing. And I get where you're coming from, but I didn't write this. I wasn't there. This wasn't my first thing. This was just the first thing that I loved from your band. So I see it differently, you know, and that's such the beauty of songwriting. That's why I love doing this so much, because I get to sit on this side of it and break down songs from some of my favorite artists. The song is 3 minutes and 24 seconds. It starts with four beeps of an alarm clock. Beep, beep, beep. And then the bass slides in, and then there's like this clock tower bell that happens. I don't, you know, I'm like, as I was listening to that, I don't recall that happening. I'm like, why is that there? But it's kind of cool. And then this voice comes in. It's Madeline. It says,
That's Lars.
Ow.
That's Lars.
Oh, is that Lars? Yeah. That's Lars that says,
yeah,
that? Okay. Lars says, ow. Hey, sleepyhead, get out of bed. And then there's some toasting going on.
Ow. Hey, sleepyhead, get out of bed.
For our listeners, I've talked about this before, and maybe you could shed some light, yeah, on exactly where toasting came from. I can't do toasting really well. I'm gonna do my horrible impression, which is really bad. what were the initial thing behind toasting? Do you recall, like, where that originated?
Sure. We always felt like Rankin Roger was the king of toasting. So toasting, for people who don't know, it's just basically a percussive a percussion, but using your mouth, your vocals. And we heard it in so much of the ska we were listening to coming out of the two-tone, and in particular the beat and Madness. And then we would hear it within the Untouchables too. They had toasting in it, and Lars was just so good at it.
Oh my gosh, amazing. And he used to make me laugh, because he filled in one tour for Less Than Jake, and he would toast, and I would just look over and go, and I we'd be on van rides, and he would try to teach me how to do it. I could never get, it's like beatboxing. Yeah. Either you can do it or you can't. And he's just incredible at this. I did a very horrible impersonation a second ago, and I'm not even going to attempt it again, but I tried to practice it. I could never get it.
it's tough. It's like a tongue twister, but without any words. But he's insane. I would say it's a strange thing to like put someone on this pedestal, but he's probably the best toaster in the world.
he's absolutely incredible. He's amazing, and what a wonderful musician in person too. So if you're listening, hello Lars. This song just starts off, and I just remember hearing this. I can take me back. We had brown carpet, we had paneling in this apartment, Brandywine Apartments in Gainesville, our little record player, and there it is. And I'm hearing this, and I'm like, oh man. Like, I had heard, like I said, I had probably a dozen or so ska bands I was listening to, but there was nothing that was this put together and fun and wacky, but there was musicianship going on. And, you know, for what it's worth, I know you're not too maybe fond of the horn part, but, like, your guys, you know, the way that the three of you played together, there wasn't many other sections at that time. You know, this is before Pro Tools, before you could fix anything.
Right.
You know, and you guys were on a shoestring budget. I know you were recording. These were basically demos that you were calling a record, you know, and it just sounds awesome when that horn comes in. And basically the horns, it's like almost a little solo section here. And then we get into the first verse, and I'm going to have you break down these lyrics here. I get up at 5 o'clock. To go to work at 9 o'clock, it takes me an hour to stick my hair up. But why? Why do I always miss the bus? And on the but why, it's like the rest of the band, three or four voices go, like they're questioning you. But why?
Cringing hearing these lyrics, but it's about, I was very young and it was about my roommate. It was when I first moved out on my own, I and three other roommates, we shared a 2-bedroom apartment, and this one guy named Mike Henneke, he would always miss the bus. He had to take the bus to work, and he would just take so long, like getting ready. And that's where this song comes from, is this roommate named Mike Henneke, and from 1988.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
And again, this is so cool to me because I never asked you about this before. I never, you know, people have said to me before, you know, when you're out on tour and they said, don't you know some of these stories? Haven't you talked to these guys? When you're on the road, you're not like picking your bro's brain about stuff, especially like if they're your hero to you, you know, like we lost our minds when we got that first tour with Pickle. It's like, whoa, you know, and same thing when we, you know, played our first shows with Boss Tones or whoever. It's like they were our idols, you know, but, and I've talked to you about this, you know, where you're like, oh, that's old stuff. And I kind of cringe at it. But I don't know. There's something here that's just, it's so fun and so good. So you wrote it about your roommate. Evidently, he couldn't catch the bus. We get into what I'm calling the first chorus. And it's, I miss the bus. I miss the bus again. I miss the bus. I miss the bus again. And you can definitely hear Lynette in this chorus. And her backing vocals are a little on the agains, on the 2 and the 4, the second and the last time, her vocals are a little off at the end, but not off in like she sung it wrong. It's how she wanted it to be sung, and she sticks out. It's such a cool little harmony.
I miss the bus. I miss the bus again. I miss the bus. I miss the bus again.
You know, even though I wrote the song, it was such a democracy with Pickle. Almost to our detriment, I feel, but for what it's worth, everyone had a say. And if they wanted to add something and put their input in, you let it happen, especially in the early days.
I think that was the allure to you guys, for me, because that energy came across on the record. And then when you saw it live, it was just like, forget about it. It was just, you know, it's almost like there's train wrecks in music that don't work. And there's train wrecks that do work. And I feel like this is a prime example. This song, I mean, everybody's there at one point. And I didn't even know that was Lars at the top. Now that you say that, I can hear that that's his voice. I just assume it was Mattingly. but which is cool. The next part, which I'm calling this verse two. This is a very crazy structure of a song. So if you'd like to correct me with what you think a part is, please interject.
Sure.
But I'm calling this verse two. When it comes in, there's a backing vocal throughout that just goes bus, bus. That's happening like in the background. And Mike Mattingly, Mr. Clean, starts off. He says, "Now why'd you miss the bus?" And you might go, "I don't know." And he says, "Were you up late last night?" You go, "I guess so." And he says, "And were you watching TV?" "Uh-huh," Mike says. "What kind of TV?" You say, "Magnavox." And Mattingly says, "Well, that's no excuse." And you say, "For what?" And then the harmony is with you and you and Mike, and I think Lynette, yes. "For what?" For missing the bus.
Oh my gosh. It's so embarrassing to hear it back, but yep.
"Now why'd you miss the bus?"
"I don't know.
Or were you up late last night?"
"I guess so."
"And were you watching TV?"
"Uh-huh."
"What kind of TV?"
"Magnavox."
"Well, that's no excuse for what?"
"For missing the bus."
I enjoy your humility. If you could see Mike's face right now, he is kind of red and he's smiling from ear to ear. But for whatever you're feeling right now, I don't feel that. I listened to this song, Mike, oh gosh, I don't know how many times in the past, but the past a day and a half leading up to talking to you, I probably listened to it 30 times. And
I'm sorry.
And I didn't get sick of it. I love it. I love it. So we get into chorus two. "I miss the bus again. I miss the bus." It kind of goes up there,
yeah,
that time, and it comes back later in the song. "I miss the bus again." And then we're in, and you haven't cringed yet till this lyric is probably going to get you right,
yep,
here. But I think it's funny and I think it's great. I'm calling this a post-chorus breakdown. And Mike says, "My boss said to me," and then Mattingly over him says, "You know you're going to rot in your own toenail, pus."
"I miss the bus again. I miss the bus. I miss the bus again.
My boss said to
you know good run, he's grown toenail pus. Why do you miss the bus?"
See, that's the crazy Mike Mattingly edition. Yep.
I've never had toenail pus. I don't know if is that a thing?
I have not had it either, but I'm guessing Mr. Clean had it.
And then he says, "Why do you always miss the bus?" And you're also saying, "Why do you always miss the bus?" at different times. It's kind of, they're kind of crisscrossing each other there. But again, it's that energy that comes across. And speaking of energy, it reminds me of some of those recordings that weren't great. Operation Ivy's energy. Some of those early Crimpshine records. I mean, they sound like they were recorded in a tin can, but there's something there that can't be replicated. You couldn't pro tool it and make it fixed and make it perfect. It wouldn't have this energy, you know? And again, like I had mentioned a moment ago, that energy that you guys created here and having what you're calling a democracy where everybody gets their say, man, did that translate to the stage. You know, I know other people have told you, I don't think you know how good your band was, how live.
I appreciate incredible. That. I do feel like we were a good live band. I don't think we were able to translate that on recordings, unfortunately, but mm-hmm. it seems to have some lasting power. We still sell records and, people buy shirts. So,
well, you're also a band that I think of, Mike, and I don't know if you ever thought of this, but I don't know if they're like, who would have produced you guys? Would it be like maybe Danny Elfman? Like who could have harnessed the insanity of Pickle and like brought it to like, I hate using the word a commercial level, but brought it to where it, I don't know, maybe sonically, I don't know. I think this is perfect what's here. I don't know what you could have done to make your band stand out anymore.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Maybe Weird Al. that would have been it. You know what? When I was thinking of influences, I had mentioned Boingo, but Weird Al's kind of in there somewhere in the Pickle DNA as well. After that part, we get into what I'm calling chorus three. I miss the bus again. I miss the bus. I miss the bus again. And then the horn reintro, same as the top of the song, comes back for the full thing. Bum 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 bum. It's just, it's awesome. It's catchy, and Chuck, he's just holding it down. That kick drum's going.
Yeah, four on the floor and
four on the floor.
Rim shots.
I that hi-hat, and every once in a while he'll get these like cool fills in that just, it's just tasty and works for the song. I'm calling it verse three. So there I am watching the bus leave me. And this is Mike singing this, Mike Park. I can't believe I missed the bus today. I have a bus pass that I have not used yet. And then Mike, Mr. Clean and Lynette here, because I always miss the bus on the last line. And it's, I'm calling chorus four. I miss the bus again. I miss the bus. I miss the bus again. Now we're in verse four. Now, why'd you miss the bus? That's Madeline, Mike Park. I don't know. Were you up late last night? I guess so. And were you watching TV? And Mike says, uh-huh. And during this part, again, there's that bus, that backing vocal. And I believe that's Lynette singing that. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's her doing that. Yeah. Okay. Up to this point, when you track this, and was this the first time you tracked the song? Like recorded the song, or did
we did a demo that we initially thought it would be a regular release, but it was just so bad. And it was before Jerry was in the band. I think it was as a four piece. We demoed this as a four piece.
Do you remember if the song, when you wrote it to that demo to this, was it any different, or were all the lyrics and all the parts here?
I think What Kind of TV was a different TV. I don't think it was a Magnavox. That's the only thing that I remember.
Do they even make Magnavoxes anymore?
I don't think so.
We're showing our age. And then the next part I love. You know, when I was into Pickle, like when I first got into you guys, I was also very much, and you can hear the seeds of Less Than Jake in this, I was very much into Screeching Weasel. And that was kind of like, I wanted to meld those together. How could I put Weasel in? I loved Weasel so much because Ben was always talking about the Brady Bunch and all these shows. And
don't be a baby. There's a big break inside of you. Inside of you. Inside of you.
And the next part here is the Madeline says, which I'm calling verse five. From the last line, he says, are you watching TV? Uh-huh. He says, I bet you're watching Three's Company. And you say, the spirited, yeah. And then you all sing, all three of you, because I love Three's Company. I love Three's Company. I love Three's Company. But that's no excuse for missing the bus.
Were you up late last night?
I guess so.
And were you watching TV?
Uh-huh.
Bet you're watching Three's Company.
Yeah,
because I love Three's Company. I love Three's Company.
Missing our bus.
Oh dear. This is getting more cringy, but cool. I'm cool with it. I can live with it. I can live with this.
Okay. I missed the bus. I missed the bus. That happens this time. I missed the bus again. And here's a question before we go any further. Do you recall the first time you played it? Where it was at? Was it in the Bay Area? And what the reaction was to this particular song?
Well, we definitely played it our first show ever, which was April 28th of 1989. And it was in a student dorm at San Jose State University. I don't remember the reaction of the song. I just remember having a lot of fun and going crazy. But I remember when we first played with the Toasters, Bucket, after talking to me, said, I Miss the Bus is your hit. And I'm like, oh, okay. That's just a small bit of trivia, but I remember that standing out and saying
no,
that.
That's really cool to hear, because the Toasters started in 1981. So they preceded you at that point by about 8 or 9 years.
Right.
So to hear that from Buck had to feel good. And he was right. I think this is one of the, and that's why I picked this song. It wasn't just because it was the first one I heard. I had legitimate questions about it. I never asked you before. Cause like I said, you go on the road with your buddies or your heroes, you don't pick their brain. It's like, yeah, you know, you don't want to go there, but I don't know. There's just something. So again, that's what drew me to ska initially was it was fun.
You know, yeah, sure.
It was fun.
Heck yeah.
I always loved music that was fun, whether it was feel good rock from the 70s or 80s to funk to soul to you know if it was fun, I was drawn to it. And you got to remember the musical climate in 1989. For those that weren't alive listening right now, or too young to remember, or even those that were there, you know, we were very much in the MTV generation. If you lived in a suburb of Florida like I did, this is pre-internet. I mean, I knew what was on the radio. I was starting to meet punk rockers, things like Maximum Rock and Roll and Flipside were starting to happen. And, you know, you can order 7 inches and you'd send a well-concealed hidden cash away and hope something shows up in 4 to 6 weeks. And most of the time it did. But for the most part, like, nobody knew what ska was. If you said ska to anybody where I lived, they wouldn't know what it was. So just the fact that you were doing this music, going out and playing shows in April of 89, because, you know, people weren't walking around in checkerboard outfits and mohawks. I mean, this was full mullet 1989. It was a different time.
Yeah, it was a different time. But we were lucky because we did have, even though Two-Tone bands at that time had just stopped touring. I think Madness toured, the original lineup of Madness toured in 88. And I think that was it. Like, all the bands from that era had stopped touring. But being on the West Coast, we had Fishbone, we had the Untouchables, and we had a great local band called the Uptones. So we were still able to go to shows. These shows were packed. It was full force, just, and a lot of fashion oriented. It was a lot of mods, a lot of Vespas, and it's cool. It's fun.
Well, and I think that's also goes to show you of geographically where you live that was going on. Again, that wasn't happening where I lived in Florida. You know, it just wasn't. It hadn't gotten there yet. I know it was happening in the Northeast. Of course, New York had a scene. New York Citizens, one of the amazing bands that comes to mind. So there was definitely pockets of it going on, and I think that was some of the reason that maybe you guys got a little earlier start than some bands, because it was a thing there, which I'd give anything to be a fly on the wall at one of those first Pickle shows. That'd be so cool. But also, not to let Mike underplay the Pickle's importance, you guys were selling some concert tickets. I mean, I remember playing the Electric Ballroom in Tempe with you guys opening up, and we weren't worth many tickets in 1996. You know, this is before Losing Streak even came out. We were still touring for Pezcore. 1,500 people sold out. You know, you'd go down the road to Tucson, to the Rialto Theater down there, and again, it was sold out. So Denver, you guys killed it. You'd go there and play, what's the room?
The Gothic.
The Gothic, yeah, you did that, but you also did the other one there on Colfax. Why am I blanking?
The Ogden? The Ogden?
The Ogden, yeah, the Ogden, yeah. And we had played there with you guys. So there was definitely, I mean, you guys were road dogs, though. I mean, you were hitting it. Do you recall the first national band that you toured with, like ska band that you got in front of and kind of wowed their crowd?
The terrible thing is, from 1989 to 1996, no band ever took us out on tour. We were never support for a tour in that entire time as a band. We had opened up for some bands. Like, we got to open up for the Boston's once in Salt Lake City. I mean, actually Provo, Utah. And we got to open up for them once in Lancaster, but never got to tour with them. Never got to tour with anybody. Our dream was to tour with Fishbone. Obviously that never happened. We never got to play with Fishbone. But we did it by just touring nonstop, and that's what killed me. I was burnt. Yeah.
I know you were. I know you were. Because I was on one of those last tours that you did, and you could just see it in your eyes, you know. And I've always said that not everyone's cut out for the road. You know, there's certain people that are lifers, and that's not to take anything away from people that want to step away from it. It's, you know, using the bathroom at 7-Eleven 4 times a day is not all it's cracked up to be.
No.
You know, and come back to my house. I got a place for you guys to crash. There's 4 German Shepherds, 3 cats. There's dog crap everywhere. There's hair everywhere.
Yes.
You know? And then you wake up to the girlfriend and the boyfriend fighting. It's not the greatest time. It can be, but it definitely gets taxing. But that's fascinating to me. I had no idea that you. I thought maybe you got at least some decent sized tours. So to build up that fan base that you did just goes to show you how great you guys were.
Yeah, it was just nonstop. Actually, you know, to correct, we did get to play. We did 8 days with Sublime before they really broke. So it was like it was like a snow core tour that our mutual agent at the time, Rick Bondi, had booked. So we did do that, but I feel like that was so late in the game. I think I was out of the band within 3 months from that. So I don't know if that counts, but I don't want to give any false information. We did do that one.
No, that's again, to be able to build up that fan, because, you know, we built up a fan base early on. We got to play. It wasn't a full tour, but I remember we played with the Boston's in Tampa. We were good for maybe 200 or 300 tickets. We played with them to 1,500 people. Next time we went to Tampa, there were 700 people there. It like doubled our audience.
Yes.
You know, we went out with Pickle. Every market we played with you, our audience doubled. I remember going back to Tempe and there was 400 or 500 kids there just for us, you know? So I can't stress the importance of, you know, bands, get with bands that are kind of, you know, kind of the same or in the genre and go out and get in front of their audience and wow their audience. It's, you can't put a price tag on that. Getting back into the song real quick, we're almost finished. We get back to the post-chorus break number two. My boss said to me, that's Mike saying this, and then Mr. Clean goes, you know, you're going to rot in your own toenail pus. And why do you always miss the bus? And Mike and Mr. Clean are saying that at kind of those crisscrossing times. And then the backing vocal comes back in on the outro. Bus. That happens 5 times. And Mike's saying, I missed the bus. And Mr. Clean says, and I had no excuse. I missed the bus and there was nothing I could do. I missed the bus. There it goes driving away. I missed the bus and there was nothing I could say. I missed the bus. I missed the bus again. And then the last line is Mattingly alone saying, I missed the bus. Oh, yeah. And there's this classic rock and roll 12 bar blues ending. I missed the bus again. I missed the bus. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I'm sorry, world.
I love it. I can't say it enough. And I love, you know, you're so humble about it. You know, I appreciate you even agreeing to talk about it, because there are songs of mine, a number of them that I would be feeling the same way. And it's so crazy. And I'm sure you had those songs in your career. You still have it. You're still out performing with Bruce Lee Band. You do the Chinkies. And I'm sure people scream songs at you that you're like, I'm not playing that. And then I have to stop myself sometimes and put myself in their shoes and go, they don't feel the way I feel about it. They love it, because I always talk about this on this show, probably almost every episode, the memories.
Yeah,
it's the memories around those songs. I listened to this song, man, and I went straight back to that apartment in 1992. It took me right back there when I didn't have a dime to my name. I didn't care what my next pack of ramen was coming from. I didn't care. It was all about the music and going to shows.
That's awesome.
And I wish I still felt that way. I don't, because I'm not 18 anymore. I don't know if I could ever be that hungry. And it has nothing to do with not having money. None of that. It's just that. You know, that youthful thing that we all go through.
I was the same way. I 10 band punk bill. I was there at the very start and I was there until the very end.
Right.
I'm not doing that anymore.
and that encapsulates everything that about this song to me, and where you're at and going, oh man, that line or this line, I have the memories attached to this song, and what the song means to me is so much more than it'll ever mean to the artist. As crazy as that sounds.
Yeah.
And I know that's true for my music too. And I have to remember that. There's times when the fan will scream, play this song from our demo from 94. I'm like, oh God, why that one? Everything about it's bad. The lyrics, the playing, the singing, you know, but something about that song got them through that last semester at college, got them through their parents' divorce, got them through whatever they were going, turmoil they were going through.
Yeah, you hit it. You hit it right on the nose. It's true. I've done that to other artists, yelled songs, and they're just like, kind of give me this smirky look. I'm like, oh, sorry. But everybody has a time in their life where something means something to them, and maybe it doesn't mean the same to another person. So I hear you on that. Yeah.
Well, last thing I want to say, and we're going to wrap up here, is you know, listening to this over 30 times, and I hadn't listened to this song in a minute. It had been a minute, but not once in those 30 or so times I was listening to this and deconstructing it, was there anything that was cringy to me? Not one thing.
Wow.
Not one. Yeah, because I don't hear it the way you hear it. I have the memories.
You're a good man, Christomix.
And you are too, Mr. Michael Park. And is there anything you'd like to leave the listeners? What's going on with you? Got any touring plans coming up? Let the world know what's going on.
Yeah, I just actually 10 days ago, I just released a new 5-song EP with the Bruce Lee Band called Division in the Heartland, and actually just finished recording a new full length for Bruce Lee Band, but we're going to try to get that out by the end of the year. And that's it. I don't see myself doing much touring anymore, but I am writing like a madman.
Awesome. And again, congratulations on 25 years of Asian Man Records. That's it's incredible. Not think of all those labels that were starting back then. It was like all the internet upstarts that happened. Where are they now? It's incredible, man.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it so much.
It's incredible. All right, Mike. Well, have a good one. Thanks for sitting in.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day, Chris. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song via MP3 only and your bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured band is Lead Shot Hazard from West London, UK. They're a 6-piece ska punk band consisting of Tom Crabb on guitar and vocals, Dave Collis on bass and vocals, Zandro Morial on drums and vocals, Eve Crabb on the alto, tenor, and barry sax, Jess Benjamin on the alto sax, and Abby Harrison on the trombone. Here's a snippet of their song, Hacky Sack.
What kind of leader are you? You said you want in, but now you're leaving. What the hell, man? I'm so dead confused. I've got these reasons in my life. Go ahead and punch in with your knife. You're right. Now it's
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So I'm sure there are some listeners out there who experienced this and some who didn't, but there was nothing quite like putting in a mail order to Asian Man Records in the late 90s.
Yeah, you can't really describe it. Everything is so immediate now. It's just at the touch of your fingertips or your phone or your computer, you can get something immediately, music wise. And back then you'd clip the little ad out of the magazine and you'd write them a letter or fill out whatever you wanted. And like I said, put a check or some well-concealed cash in there and hope something turned up in 4 to 6 weeks. And when it did, it was just like, I wore holes in these records because I was waiting and just anticipating. And it was cool. It was a lot of fun.
And I wore holes in the t-shirts I got from Asian Man Records. I mean, everything was iconic about it, from the actual music to the logo. And that is all thanks to this week's guest, Mike Park, who, dude, it's so funny when I hear these stories about Skank and Pickle from you that I know Mike Park as this mild-mannered guy. I never saw Skank and Pickle. I liked them, but I never got to see them. And to hear these stories about them live, it seems completely out of left field that they were this wild, crazy band on stage.
Well, and that's the thing, too, that I think were a lot of this for Mike, where he's like, you know, they were never really captured on a record how they were live. And I that's why I talked to him about the producer. Like, who would have produced you guys? Who could have captured that raw energy? Because they were a force to be reckoned with, and they were a true inspiration. Like I said, it was... If I could have melded Pickle with Screeching Weasel, and I would have been the happiest. And there, I think there were some Less Than Jake songs that kind of did that early on.
just the live show. He was an inspiration to me. He was a front man that, and I didn't know it till probably knowing him for a year or two that, and especially doing some, we got out on a tour with Pickle, and I'd see every night it was complete stream of consciousness. It wasn't canned. It wasn't rehearsed. It wasn't like, okay, here's the part where I'm going to say that MC Hammer wrote this song with us. No. The next night it was, you know, Richard Pryor's cousin helped me write this song. It was something completely left of center from the night before. I'm like, and I took a page out of that. Less than Jake, that's what I do, you know?
Mike Park, not only being an influential ska artist himself, he also might be the biggest ska fan in the world. I don't think that's a stretch to say that. The guy has an entire record label based on, you know, not that he only released ska, but has released so much ska and you know, been the person who put together the Ska Against Racism tour and just done so many things in the name of the genre and world of ska. You know, I would say that maybe he's the number one ska fan in the world. Is that outrageous to say that?
No, it's not. There's... You know, I can count on one hand the people that have his passion for it, especially in the industry. He eat, breathes, and sleeps it. He loves it, and the whole band did. You know, like when we met them, it was they were all immersed in the scene, if that's what you want to say about it, the scene, the culture, the everything about ska. And I feel like a broken record. I can't stress enough this. They were just mesmerizing live. They were so energetic. And Mike would be up there and in between singing and doing a sax take, and he'd be like doing karate moves, you know, like the stereotypical thing of like, oh, he's Asian, he must know karate. And he didn't, but he was doing karate chops on stage. And just like, you're looking at this going, what? And then there'd be Jerry. He'd, you know, he would be wrestling with Lars, the other guy on stage. And they were just so fun. And this track, I Miss the Bus, is the first song I heard from the band, which is funny that it was the first song they recorded. And it's a song that Bucket from the Toasters said, that's your hit, because it kind of is.
I felt for Mike during this episode because I was seeing it from two different perspectives. I was seeing it from your side of being an enormous fan and being influenced by it and having the memories attached to it and just having this burning love for it. And I saw it from Mike's side being like, dude, that's the first song we ever wrote. And then, you know, seeing him like physically cringe when he read some of the lyrics and things like that. And I know that feeling too, just as you do, when someone brings up like a punchline song from our first album or something. And I'm like, oh God, like I seriously want to like get in the fetal position because I feel that way about like your early work. But then someone experiences it a whole different way than you do. So I was seeing both sides during this, and I felt for Mike, but I think it's really cool that he was willing to talk about it as well.
No, and he understood where I was coming from just as much as I understood where he was coming from. We both, I get it. I mentioned it, man, there's songs in my career. I also think that it's a little bit easier to swallow, you know, some enormous hit. You know, yeah, maybe you had this is on the big wish list. You had Bruce Springsteen on here talking about Born in the USA, and he's like, oh, that song again. But it's a little bit easier to talk about that maybe for him because it sold a gazillion records and made his career what it is. But you know, something like I Missed the Bus was never a hit.
Right.
It was a hit to me, right, though. It was a hit to the fans. Yeah, but I've said that before about my band, about other bands. Just because something didn't sell a million copies doesn't mean it wasn't a hit. You know, what did it do to the people that it did do something to? And you see him at the shows. And here I am 30 years later talking about this song to Mike as the gushing fan. You know, it was a hit to me.
Right. Do you know when Skank and Pickle broke up? Do you know like what year it was?
Yeah, they broke up in 1996, and they carried on for about a year after that. They had another sax player named Mike Liu. Mike came in for about a year, and we were doing some touring with them, Less Than Jake was, during this time period. But it just kind of fizzled out, and not to take anything away from the other members of the band, but Park was really the heart and soul of Pickle. Mike was. He was just the driving force behind the band, you know, from a business standpoint and other things. But, you know, when he left, it was kind of, you know, kind of the demise of the band. So yeah, they were around for about 7 years.
It seems like terrible timing for the band to end because I knew Skank and Pickle. It's kind of like I knew about Less Than Jake and I knew about Real Big Fish and Suicide Machines and Boss Stones and all these bands as a teenager, and then found out about this band, Skank and Pickle, like, oh, this was an influence of these bands. And I remember the Green album. Was it?
Yes. Yeah, that was the last. That was the last record they did. It was a collection of demos and cover songs that they put out. It was kind of like a last hurrah for them that they did on that record. But the thing about Pickle is you're right. They should have been able to enjoy the third wave ska renaissance.
Yeah,
that started really when they broke up. It started in '96 and went till about 2000. It was a good 3 or 4 years there when it was just going haywire. But Mike said he was exhausted. He was tired of touring. You know, you got to remember from 89 to 96 when they were doing it, you know, these guys were out there year after year and they weren't playing the greatest of clubs, the accommodations. They were touring in a van. Okay. And these were large people in the band, not heavy set, just tall, big people with a merchandise person they were taking. They had, you know, 8 people crammed in a van with all their gear, sleeping in people's floors for 7 years. And they just had it.
Right. And I didn't really understand, and I think you were kind of taken aback by this too, when Mike brought up that no bands ever took them on tour. And I don't know if that's a product of they were just too wild, or if it was that at that time ska wasn't into that third wave boom yet, and that if they would have stuck it out a little longer, that yeah, maybe, you know, Less Than Jake, A Real Big Fish, Boss Stones, whoever would have been taking them out at those, you know, when they rose to the meteoric heights, you know. I don't know what the deal was there, you know.
Yeah, he had mentioned, I was kind of getting more into like, okay, when the Boston's come through San Francisco, did you play with them? And he said, yeah, they played with the Boston's once in like Utah, and they did like a show with the Toasters, and they did some dates with Sublime. But for the most part, it was just them. They built that following up. That's what's so amazing. Like I said, how many bands can say they sold 1,500 tickets in Tempe, Arizona?
Right.
You know, they go down and do 1,000 tickets in Tucson at the Rialto. I was there. I witnessed it. And that wasn't our crowd. Maybe some people there knew who we were, but we were touring for Pezcore. They built that on their own, and it just shows you how hard they worked and how much effort they put into it.
I mean, that's awesome. That's impressive. That is the most inspiring DIY story you can hear, is when a band, yeah, we're not getting support tours, we're doing our own thing that doesn't sound like anybody else, and yet you're packing clubs like that. That's awesome.
And speaking of inspiring, Chris, our listeners inspire you and I each month with their generosity by giving to our fundraiser. And the fundraiser for July is Star Ovarian Cancer Foundation. And you can find all the info about it over at ChrisDemakesADifference.com. And whatever you can give, $1, $2, $5, $10, it goes a long way into helping this awful, awful disease.
If every listener of Chris DeMakes a Podcast pitched in $1 at ChrisDemakesADifference.com, we could raise like millions of dollars for each monthly fundraiser. Just millions.
Millions of pennies at least. But in all seriousness, thanks to each and every one of you who gives each month. It feels so good to give back. The letters that we've gotten from the organizations each month, they can't thank us enough. And that by thanking us, they're thanking you. So from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. We really appreciate it. I'm still doing custom songs. That's right. I'll write you your very own custom song, or that special someone, a coworker, a friend, a foe, a lover. Yeah. And Chris is going to roll the most ridiculous song you've probably heard in a while right now.
I can write you a ska song, or maybe a punk song. A punk song. I want to write you a punk song. A punk song. I want to write you a mid-tempo rock song. Something you can sing along or scream.
Actually, you don't want to hear me rap. Pick any other style, trust me.
I could even write a ballad for your anniversary or your birthday.
Looking for a voiceover, jingle, or music for your business, podcast, or TV show? Well, look no further. I'm your guy.
Yeah, if you'd like more info on that track you just heard to make your very own special custom song from yours truly. You can hit me up at ChrisDemakes@gmail.com. Don't forget to give me a follow over at Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. And what else we got going on, Chris? Want to talk about our VIP program again?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, speaking of ridiculous songs, you can hear a ridiculous song about you and I in our After Party podcast at the beginning of every episode of The After Party, which, if you're interested in hearing it, you just go to ChrisDemakes.com, where you'll see information about our program. Not only will you get extra episodes every week and discounts on merchandise, but also you're helping out your buds. We bring you this podcast every week and we put a lot of time and effort into it. So if you could help us out and help us continue creating this podcast that I'm sure you love. Well, I'm assuming you love. If you made it this far in the podcast to the point where, you know, it's about to end and we're talking about our supporting cast, I assume that you love it. And, you know, for the amount of money that you can find in your couch cushions, I don't know if people still have money in their pockets, it falls out. We all use cards or whatever. But my point being that you could probably dig up enough change on your dresser each month to, you know, be part of our supporting cast program.
Yeah, and the After Party episodes are cool. You know, they don't deal just with songwriting like the main podcast. These could be any topics from touring to records we like growing up. It's a vast array of subjects, and Chris and I have a ball talking about it. So again, please head over to ChrisDemakes.com and check out our supporting cast VIP program. And I want to thank this week's guest, Mike Park, my dear old friend, for sitting in on the show. It was a lot of fun. We'll see you next week.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I do like chocolates.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.